one of the most memorable and beautiful points of a person's life is the birth of their child. A moment in time where one feels the greatest sense of simcha, of celebration, not just within the family, but a celebration, a simcha within the entire community. The Torah actually discusses childbirth in this week's Parsha. Although, in reality, it really seems to be completely out of place. See, Parshas Tazria, in which we're reading only Parshas Tazria this week, sometimes is a double Parsha. Tazria Mitzora. And outside of the very beginning of this portion, the rest of Tazria and the entire Parsha Mitzora, sentence after sentence, pasuk after pasuk, discussing an individual who has a skin disease, a disease of saras upon their skin, and afflicts that individual. Why? Because that person is a sinner. And one of the sins that that individual did was they were a baal lashon hara. They gossiped. They spoke negatively about their fellow man. What on earth does this have anything to do with the beginning of our parsha, Tazria, about childbirth? Childbirth is not a sin. In fact, the Torah says the very first mitzvah in the Torah is Puravu, is a person who's able to have a child and to raise that child with proper morals and values. It's a mitzvah. What on earth is the idea of childbirth found in the midst of all this? The midst of a sinner. The reality is, the woman apparently did a sin. It must be, because the Torah says, the Torah tells us that she must bring an ola, an elevation offering, as well as a chatas, a sin offering. Echad l'ola v'echad l'chatas v'chiper aleha hakohen v'tahera. By bringing those offerings, the Kohen shall provide atonement for her, and she will become purified. What exactly is going on? Why is it necessary for her to have to bring a chatas, a sin offering? And on this, the Gemara in Maseches Nida on Lamed Aleph and Beis says that possibly, maybe during the time when she was in intense pain, during the labor, maybe she made a shvua, she swore that she would not have any more children and that she would separate herself from her husband. And because she said that oath, that shvua, for that reason, she has to bring a chatas, a sin offering. But the problem with this Gemara is that it's maybe she did this. Well, why then does the Torah say that every single woman has to bring a chatas? Wouldn't it make sense that only the women in which we know made such an oath, they made such a shvua, such an individual would have to bring a chatas, a sin offering, for not choosing their words properly, which then, of course, would also fit into the whole idea of the rest of our parsha, of a person who's a baal lashon hara who doesn't use their words properly, who doesn't think before they speak and realize the ramifications for their actions. But if she didn't make such a shvua, why is it necessary for her to bring a chatas, which clearly the Torah requires that every single woman who goes through the process of childbirth must bring this chatas? To answer this question, I'd like to remind you of a very peculiar medrash that was cited by the Ramban in Parshas Bereishis. The Torah tells us in the creation of the world, Vayar Elokim es kol asher asa, that Hashem saw everything that he had made, all the things that he had created, v'hineh tov ma'od. God doesn't say that the creation was good. Typically, he says, it's tov, it's good. In this situation, Hashem says, it's not just good. It's not just tov, it's tov ma'od. It's perfect. It's unbelievable. Ask the Medrash, what was Hashem looking upon? That Vayar Elokim. And Hashem looked at this thing and said, this is perfect, this is tov ma'od. Says the Medrash, what is tov ma'od? Zeh yetzer hara. What is something which is perfect? This is referring to the evil inclination, which of course is very difficult to understand, because the whole essence of a yetzer hara is ra, it's evil, it's terrible. So how could something which is evil and terrible and ra, how could that be something which Hashem himself says is not just tov, but tov ma'od? So we discussed this and explained in Parshas Bereishis. We spoke before about the pitfalls of internal perfectionists. That for some people, it's an all or nothing mentality. If they cannot be perfect at the get-go, they will not even make the efforts of trying. This is the Yetzer Hara, the Tov Ma'od mentality. The one who says, I am afraid to fail, and therefore I'm not even going to try. And therefore, an internal perfectionist will not accomplish that which they're able to, because they feel that everything must be tov ma'od. And if what I do is not tov ma'od, I will not even try. If Parshas Bereishis discussed the idea of the internal perfectionist, I believe Parshas Tazria talks about the external perfectionist. And the first example of a person who looks at others and demands a tov ma'od mentality, who says that everything must be perfect for you. You must be perfect. I don't have to be perfect, but you better be perfect. The very first example, as we see time and time again, especially in this day and age, are parents. And we all know this. A person has a child, and although it's a tremendous simcha, and we expect such tremendous qualities that are going to occur to this child's life, we look in the crib at this little poor infant, and we think, I wasn't perfect. I wasn't so great in high school. I managed to squeak by and get some college degree. My job isn't perfect. My life isn't what I was hoping it would be. But I am saying that this baby, this child of mine, is going to be different. Everything will be different. For this child, he will be perfect. Explains Rabbi Joseph Ozarowski that this is the symbolism of the two offerings that the woman must bring, not just for herself, but also on behalf of her husband. The dual mentality of parents is to have this external perfectionist attitude toward their children. They look at their child and they view the child just like one of the offerings that they bring. The Ola, the elevation offering. What is an Ola? It's an offering that is completely consumed on the altar, which means it is perfect in the eyes of God, that there's not a single thing that is missing from it. And the Ola attitude is also found by parents, that they look at their child and say, this child will be completely elevated, completely my child, just like the offering, will have a perfect, complete life, a meaningful life, an elevated existence. It's very fascinating that Rashi points out that even though the Torah does tell us, Echad Ola v'Echad L'Chatos, the reality is, that is not the correct order in which the sacrifices are brought. Says Rashi, Lo hikdim ha-kosuv el ha-mikra. This order is actually not correct. It's only in this order, in the sentence structure. Although, but Rashi says, L'hakrava, when it comes to actually bringing, when you have these two offerings to bring, Chatas Kodem La'ola, the sin offering comes before the elevation offering. Therefore, one must ask, why then does the Torah write it out of order? Why does it first mention the Ola and then the Chatas, if in fact the sin offering is brought before the elevation offering? And on this, he explains that the reason why you must bring a chatas, a sin offering, is because of the ola attitude that you have toward your child. That you look at your child and you say that this child must represent and mimic a perfect ola. That this action of a parent, that is worthy of a chatas. That is your mistake. That is your sin. But why? Why is it a sin? After all, every parent, all they want is what's best for their newborn child. We want to help our children. We want them to be able to have comfort and to have nachas and to have simcha. Why is it so bad? Why is it a chatas? And of course, there's nothing wrong with hoping that your child will have such a wonderful and comfortable life. And maybe if you struggled in your life, there's nothing wrong with helping your children. But the problem is that when you become an external perfectionist and you require perfection from your children, and anything but perfection, a 99 on their test is unacceptable. Next time you better get 100. How does that child feel? By making that child think that he must be perfect and anything but perfect is unacceptable, what type of self-esteem are you building up in that child? That child will unfortunately, just like the internal perfectionist, that is what they will become. An individual who ultimately will not be able to take challenges in life because of the risks and the fear of failure. And I believe this is the reason why the Torah tells us in the very beginning of our parsha, Uvayom Hashmini Yimol Basar Alato, that on the eighth day of that child's life, one is supposed to perform the mitzvah of Bris Milah. And the question is, why does the Torah need to tell us this? After all, we already have seen the mitzvah of Bris Milah performed numerous times by our avos. We know this is a mitzvah which is already given to us. Why does the Torah have to emphasize this point? On the eighth day, make sure that you have a bris milah for your son. And I believe that the concept of a bris milah is to teach the parents that they should not think that their children are perfect. There's nothing wrong with striving toward perfection. However, a child is not born with perfection. And therefore, when that parent looks upon the bris milah and realizes that there was an imperfection within the child physically upon the time of birth, they will also be able to remember that this child is not perfect. Rather, they're able to make mistakes. Let them grow. Let them, as life, as a process of going from one potential mistake to the next, but hopefully growing to become closer to perfection, but to not demand it at the get-go, as it will destroy that child's self-esteem. And I believe that this is the concept also of the Baal Lashon Hara. Because a person who speaks ill about another person, and he looks at them harshly, and they realize that this person, look at him, he has imperfections. Look at his clothes. Look at his hair. It's so disgusting. His nails. He doesn't look nice. And therefore you start speaking negatively about such a person. What is the punishment for a Baal Lashon Hara? So on this, the Torah tells us that that individual will receive saras, that person will get something on their skin, a white blotch upon their skin. And therefore, what is the reason for this? What is the midi k'neged mida? What is the measure for measure, the quid pro quo for giving someone who spoke Lashon Hara saras? What does one have to do with the other? The answer is that when that person looks upon their skin, they will realize that they were so busy judging others and saying that this person is imperfect and therefore I spoke about them. Why don't you look in the mirror? Look at yourself. you're not so perfect either. And therefore, once you look at yourself and realize your imperfections, then ultimately, God willing, the tsaras will be a form of rehabilitation, a process to unlearn that everyone around you must be perfect. And this is what we do. The Torah tells us that the pasuk says, "Begodav you perumim veroshio yeperua." The Torah tells us that the hair on his head shall be unshorn, and that he should cloak himself up to his lips, and he should call out, "I am Tomei, I am Tomei, I am contaminated, I am imperfect. Look at my hair, look at my clothes, I'm not so perfect either." And once a person realizes that they are not perfect, and it's okay that we're not perfect because we're not supposed to be perfect, we're supposed to strive and try to improve ourselves. And life is that process of continuous growth. But for one to look at others and to demand perfection, they must first look within themselves and realize that they themselves are not so perfect. And I believe this is a very important message. It's an important message not only for parents and not only for a person who speaks Lashon Hara. But unfortunately, we find so many young men and young women who are of marriageable age, but nonetheless, they're unable to find a shidduch. And of course, there are numerous reasons for this issue that has become so much of an issue that it's now become the shidduch crisis. It's become a crisis. And perhaps one of the many reasons could become that a child at a young age looks at a girl and says, "She must be perfect." And the girl looks at the boy and says, "He must be perfect." And if there's any shortcomings, if the way that they look is a little bit different, if they have this flaw, the way they speak, and the way that they behave, the way they act, I'm just not interested. Because unfortunately, we all watch fairy tales. And in Cinderella, a fairy tale, they all live happily ever after. And that's how most people think at a young age, that that is what happens, that everyone has to be perfect. And if she's not perfect, she's not for me. And if he's not perfect, he's not for me. Unfortunately, when we start demanding in external perfectionism that everyone outside of you must be perfect, you're never going to find your beshert, because there is no one that is perfect. And once we look within, like the person who has tsaras, and realizes that we may have a lot of very positive qualities, but we are not perfect, then we can maybe look at others with a different lens and realize that they do not have to be perfect either, but nonetheless, they may have such positive qualities that in fact it should be a zibug, that in fact it should be a shidduch. And this is not just a shidduch crisis. This is something which can be understood when it comes to our coworkers, our family, our spouse. We often have unrealistic expectations. And unfortunately, an individual who has unrealistic expectations, you will be bound to be quite disappointed in life. In conclusion, we are now entering the month of Nisan, the month in which we're going to be celebrating Pesach. You see, it's Mitzrayim, where Hashem took the Jewish people out of bondage of slavery. Mi'avdos l'cheres. The question is, when God looked upon us, did God say, "I will only redeem them if that nation is perfect"? Far from it. In fact, Chazal tell us that the Jewish people were on the Memtesh Shari Tumah. We were on almost the very, very bottom level. We were so far down. We were almost on the 50th level. We were on level 49. So the question is, why then did Hashem redeem us? And the answer is, because God was able to find a redeeming quality within the Jewish people. He was able to find something positive, something good. And therefore, for that one thing, that we were doing something right, that was the reason why Hashem said, "That I will take the Jewish people out." They're careful with the way that they dress, the way they speak. They have certain mitzvot that they're still adhering to, that they're careful. That is enough for them to be redeemed. And if we could only learn to emulate the ways of Hashem, to be able to find the good, We must do so and begin to find the good in all the people, everyone around us. And when we do so, we will be able to live a much greater life by realizing that nobody is perfect. Good job.